Kansas City, there's a pretty gal named Mary Lou, and she plays the piano in a manner that is all too new. Here of late she's playing with a band. Let me tell you of this baby at the Baby Grand. When you hear a hot jumbo, who's the power behind the mold? It's the lady who swings the band. When you hear the saxes ride, who's the reason why they glide? It's the lady who swings the band.
The lady who swings the band, Mary Lou Williams, this hour of the program. She's been discussed as the most influential woman in the history of jazz. She was a child prodigy, came from a very impoverished family, and family indifferent, really, to her many talents. She played with many of the big bands. She composed incredible music. And this weekend in Madison, actually, from Thursday of this week until Sunday of October 3rd, performers and scholars from several traditions will celebrate the life and work of Mary Lou Williams with all kinds of events. The organizers of the Mary Lou Williams Centennial Celebration hope to encourage local appreciation of jazz while rebuilding connections between jazz and the Black community. There will be it's part of the book festival, because there are a couple great books about her, The Little Piano Girl and Morning Glory. The author of Morning Glory will be joining us for part of our program today. The Wisconsin Historical Society Auditorium will be having five students from Madison's First Wave Hip Hop Theater Ensemble presenting a performance commissioned by the Centennial Celebration, the recordings of Mary Lou Williams, a 50-year retrospective, a symposium on envisioning the future of jazz, and more coming up this weekend in Madison. We have three guests with us during the course of this hour. Joining us the entire hour is Fabu, who's artistic coordinator, co-director of the Mary Lou Williams Centennial Celebration in Madison. She was appointed Madison's Poet Laureate in 2008 and will serve in that position until 2011. She is a major figure in Madison's literary arts movement, holds double masters from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Fabu, thank you very much for being part of this Mary Lou Williams celebration this morning.
I'm delighted.
Yeah, great to have you here. Father Peter O'Brien is also with us. He is a longtime friend and executive director of the Mary Lou Williams Foundation. He was incredibly instrumental in making her known to a wider world, and he is, as I said, executive director of the foundation. He was a young man when he met her. Father Peter O'Brien, thank you very much for being with us. Tell me how you met Mary Lou Williams and how ultimately you became director of the foundation. You must have certainly thought that you had met somebody who was extraordinary.
Well, I actually first met her in the pages of Time magazine.
Really?
It was a very great article in January of 1964. And she was called the Prayerful One. What got me was, I was on the prowl for a life. I was in the seminary, but I was on the prowl for a life. And there was a photograph of her inside the Oval Bar at the piano at the Hickory House on 52nd Street in New York, and also at the communion rail of St. Francis Xavier Church on 16th Street. I had gone to that school, St. Francis Xavier High School, and there was a man mentioned in the column, Father Anthony Woods, about whom I had been crazy. He was not part of the school, but there was a beautiful theater there, and Father Woods was in charge of the Xavier Players, professional actors out of work, put on plays, Xavier Symphony, the Village Light Opera Company. He was a very great man, and I was nuts about him, and he thought I was very funny, and I'd be constantly hanging around. Then, 6 years later, I read in Time magazine that Father Woods had been Mary Lou's spiritual director and confessor, and that he also had written the words to her hymn in honor of St. Martin de Porres, Black Christ of the Andes. So that was a crisscross, and I simply couldn't resist. I sneaked out of my seminary. I was AWOL, and down I went to hear her at the Hickory House, and I've written about this very well in a booklet which accompanies the Smithsonian Folkways CD release of Mary Lou Williams Presents Black Christ of the Andes. It was a powerful, powerful meeting, and within no time, I mean instantly, we became profound friends.
Yes, we'll talk about that friendship more in a moment.
But that was in 1964. I was 23.
Oh, my.
And she died in 81 when I was 40, and I'd been with her during that 17 years, most of the time managing her, certainly as a friend and then part-time manager and then full-time. And she indicated in her last will that I ought to be considered as a director of the Mary Lou Williams Foundation by the other members of the board. She had formed the foundation a year before she died, and there were three board members at that time, four including her.
So that meeting was incredibly profound in your life. Fabu, I want to talk to you for a moment about some of the events this weekend and also ask you if she is indeed one of the most influential women in the history of jazz, and you're bringing her forward to us again to greater prominence. I don't think all that many people know about how profound her history was and what a gifted and genius performer she was. She's not as well known, do you think?
I know she's not as well known, and that is one of the tragedies that we're trying to remedy in our small way in Madison, Wisconsin, because the height and breadth of Mary Lou Williams is just phenomenal. Her abilities as a pianist, her abilities as an arranger and composer, as you said, but even as a role model, as an artist, as a African-American woman who spanned 60 years of jazz and who was able to persevere, who was able to be on radio, who was able to be an international jazz star, to be a woman of faith, to be a complex and incredibly wonderful personality. All of that is so inspiring to so many different people on so many different levels. So for artists, musicians, for women, for people of faith themselves, for, you know, her life and her talent really touches the world. And in Madison, we just feel for her 100th birthday, she needs to be lifted up out of obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she needs to be remembered. In fact, I met a poet who had gone to her performances and said at that particular night she would play and she would turn her head to the side and say, "I am Mary Lou Williams." She'd play a little bit more and say, "Remember me." So we want the world to remember the gifts and talents of Mary Lou Williams.
And let's talk about those talents. Father O'Brien, I love people who are able to just hear a piece of music and then whatever the miraculous process is in their brains that they translate to their fingers, they're able to play what they have just heard, an ability she evidently had when she was very, very young.
Nate, an ability born with a hearing. That's right. You left one thing out. You left the heart out. Mary Lou used to say, "From the mind, through the heart, not the fingertips."
Mm.
So there's got to be an enormous amount of feeling involved. I read about something where a 10-year-old little boy is being pushed. Well, I mean, you know, great. Maybe he has great fingers, but I'm not going to hear him. He hasn't got anything to say to me yet. You see what I mean?
Right.
In the way of human experience. So that's really part of it, too. You know, Andy Warhol was absolutely right. People get exactly 15 minutes of fame, and then it ends. Because there'd been one thing after the other. And during her lifetime in the 70s, she had an enormous amount of publicity, an enormous amount of exposure. Those things end. They end fast. I doubt if a large number of people, if confronted on the street, could tell you who Duke Ellington is. So this is an ongoing effort, I think. There are efforts needed to continue, such as the, by the way, in Mattis, it's a tremendous amount of work has gone on out there for almost a year now to pull all of this off.
It's been a work of love.
It's been a work of love, something.
And celebration.
Yeah.
And tell me what all you've put together, Fabu.
Well, we start off for children. We have Marianne McDonald, who's written The Little Piano Girl, and she'll be starting us off on Thursday night at the Madison Children's Museum. We also have the music of Mary Lou Williams that our own father, Peter O'Brien, is going to be presenting, which is really just looking at a 50-year multimedia review of her recorded music. That's on Friday. And most of these activities are free. In fact, all of them are free, with the exception of the concert. So we also have a symposium to look at Mary Lou from an academic, and as Father Peter Bryan just said, look at how that music went from the mind to the heart to the fingertips. So there's going to be a symposium with a lot of leading professors who have studied her music and studied her work, and that's also going to be on Saturday, October 2nd, at the UW Powell Center. And we have as well Linda Dahl, who's going to be joining us. And she wrote a biography. She's written several books about women. She's written about jazz women. She has a new book that she's just brought out. But we're bringing her because of her wonderful biography on Mary Lou Williams called Morning Glory. And she's going to be in Madison on Saturday at a Room of One's Own feminist bookstore. And then we come to the concert itself. Mary Lou Williams at 100, a retrospective concert, and that's starring Jerry Allen and Carmen Lundy. It has George Shirley in it. And this is the Mary Lou Williams Collective. And this is so profound for us because, as we've all been saying here this morning, it's not just what she's done in the past, although that's tremendous and worthy of note, but it's how she's also reaching into the future through youth. You mentioned First Wave, who's doing a hip-hop interpretation of Mary Lou. But in this concert, and that's Saturday, October 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Overture Center, we're going to have an interpretation of Mary Lou Williams' music by a woman, Jerry Allen, who has been devoted to exposing her and celebrating her and, again, interpreting her music. And I just think that's going to be phenomenal to look at this being her 100th birthday and to see how she's projecting and influencing national and international jazz artists even today. After that, on the Sunday, we're having a concert performance of Mary Lou's Mass, and that's going to be at Mount Zion Baptist Church in Madison. And so we end up with the biographers, which would be Linda Dahl and then Dr. Tammy Kernoodle, who's also written a biography, Soul on Soul. So, again, it's something for everyone. If you're a family and you want your children to just be inspired and encouraged by her being a child prodigy and about her playing and just exploring at such an early age. If you're an intellectual and you love reading biographies, there's something for you. There's a symposium for those people who like to look at music in a more academic way. I mean, we're very excited about Father Peter O'Brien's multimedia review of Mary Lou Williams' music. There's the concert, which is the music itself, and then there are the biographers, and there are local jazz artists who will be playing. So we are really working hard in Madison, our whole Mary Lou Williams Centennial Committee, to do her proud, to do her memory and her work proud.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And if Father O'Brien, I know that that's part of your mission, if not the main mission, is to do her proud. When you became the executive director of the Mary Lou Williams Foundation, what did you see and what do you see as your mission?
My mission is to get her out there, that's all. To get the, first of all her papers are now at the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University in Newark. She's preserved forever. many of her works have been reissued on CD. I have two separate publishing companies are publishing her big band scores, and next spring the entire Zodiac Suite for chamber orchestra. That's my job. And to get new music recorded. She wrote three masses. Only one of them has been recorded, and not even in its full version. So I've gotten grants this year to go ahead and record Mass 1 and 2, which is Mass for the Lenten season. About the weekend, to me, one thing hasn't been mentioned. The symposium has been mentioned in general. I would mention two people who appear in the afternoon. One is Dr. Ted Bura from Kenyon College in Ohio, who has put together a critical edition of 12 of Mary's scores from 1929 to 1968. He'll speak. And then Dr. Farrah Griffin, who has written the single best book on Billie Holiday. She's from Columbia University, and she'll speak. She's writing a book now on four women living in New York and working in New York during the 1940s. And one of those is Mary Lou. I can't emphasize enough the two major musical events. That's Saturday night, the Jerry Allen Trio, which includes Kenny Davis on bass and Casa Overall on drums. Casa's uncle is the governor of Wisconsin. And her first major work, Zodiac Suite, will take up the first half of that concert. Other works after that, and Carmen Lundy will sing three tunes in that second half. And Mary Lou's other great extended work, Mary Lou's Mass, that's Sunday morning. So you'll get a pretty good, solid. Both Carmen and Jerry have worked on both these pieces repeatedly across the last 10 to 12 years. Carmen going way back before that with the Mass with Children. So it's a heavily musical weekend. There are other things involved, but I really want to mention Ted and Farrah because they will enter into her in precisely a scholarly way. Tammy is also going to speak. She's got a keynote address. I think that would be follow more from biography than scholarship and so forth. So it's and my own effort on Friday night, I have two different pieces of video. One, a trailer from a new film by a black woman named Carol Bash about Mary Lou. And a 10-minute trailer, which is excellent. And then some of her concert in 1978 in Switzerland. And I've taken about 20 selections from CDs and about 50 photographs to accompany them. So it'd be a very good idea of who she is after that.
Thank you so much.
Through Father eyes and ears.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah,
Father
right.
Peter O'Brien, we thank him for being with us to talk about his longtime friend. He's now executive director of the Mary Lou Williams Foundation. Fabu, Madison's poet laureate, artistic co-director of the Mary Lou Williams Centennial Celebration, will remain with us. And we'll have joined the conversation Linda Dahl, author of Morning Glory, a biography of Mary Lou Williams. So all of that is coming up on the Ideas Network. This is what you're listening to, Zodiac Suite Revisited, Mary Lou Williams. Bearcat Shuffle, Mary Lou Williams, centennial celebration, and quite a celebration it will be in Madison this weekend. Joining our conversation, Fabu is still with us. Linda Dahl, author of Morning Glory, a biography of Mary Lou Williams, is with us as well. She's written frequently about jazz. Her previous book on the subject, Stormy Weather, The Music and Lives of a Century of Jazz Women, was widely hailed as a groundbreaking book when it was published in 1984. This book looks at Mary Lou's incredibly interesting life, her being an illegitimate child of an impoverished and indifferent mother, a child prodigy performing at the age of seven, and her career as a composer, as an arranger, working with the likes of Duke Ellington and Benny Goodman, and compositions recorded by Dizzy Gillespie, Nat King Cole, Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, etc. We will welcome phone calls, too. I don't mean to exclude you. Some of you may be very big Mary Lou Williams fans or have questions about jazz in America and the future of jazz. We welcome your phone calls at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Linda Dahl, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
Isn't it? I'm always amazed by people who have these incredible gifts. And Father O'Brien was talking about how she had the fingers for to play and what was going on in the head, but the heart developed as she grew. But to perform the way she could perform at the age of seven, she just heard things and she could play them immediately. I'm amazed by that talent.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was a child prodigy, and she was always an ear musician, so that's what started her off.
Did she ever learn to write music and to read music, or was it always an ear musician?
No, when she, at about the age of 18, 17, she was on the road earlier than that with vaudeville groups, but when she started to play with the 12 Clouds of Joy, which was a great swing band, she was kind of their specialty pianist, but was trying to get them to let her perform her own compositions with them. And eventually they saw what a tremendous talent she had, and then some of the musicians in the band taught her the rudiments of, reading music.
She was a champion, early champion of bop. Can you explain to me what bop is and why she became an early champion?
I think this was in the early 40s when Mary Lou had moved to New York and was a fixture at Cafe Society, the first integrated nightclub. And she was friends with all the musicians, and she started to get to know younger players like Bud Powell and Thelonious Monk and Tad Dameron and Charlie Parker, everybody. And as a composer at heart, she was always open to, experiments in music. And bop was fascinating to her because it moved things along harmonically and rhythmically. And this was something she always pursued in her music and continued to do so, listening to certain classical composers later on, and that also influenced her.
Was it her grandfather? Is that what you write about, her grandfather, who loved classical music and she wanted to play that for him?
I think it wasn't so much her grandfather. It might have been her stepfather.
Mm.
It was more a sense of, at the time, everything that you heard on the player piano, which was when, in the early part of the century, I don't think people distinguished between types of music so much. I remember Louis Armstrong saying the same thing. He heard opera and loved it. So I think it was Caruso. So I think it was just more of a sense of good music and being open to good music.
Fabu, let me bring you into this for a moment. I know you do a lot of work with school children, encouraging their creativity. When they're looking at music, is jazz something that intrigues young people today, or is it hip hop? Will jazz be forever in our hearts, or is it going to fade away?
Well, jazz has to be forever in our hearts. First of all, with school children, it's so often what they're exposed to. And so hip-hop is the dominant music that's played on radio stations. But I have worked extensively with children in the school districts here around jazz. And, of course, they love the improvisation of jazz.
Yes.
How different it is, soft, loud, smooth, stride, bebop, just all the kinds of jazz. But the fact that it's forever new, that every time someone plays, it's new. Special. It has, you know, some things that are familiar, but widely innovative. And so that's what we really appreciate about Mary Lou Williams and about introducing her to school children, so they'll understand that women were jazz greats too, and that this giftedness and talent can exist in and be nurtured in anyone. So it's really, when Father O'Brien talked about the foundation, Mary Lou Williams had a vision for children being exposed to jazz, loving jazz, being able to create jazz. So the foundation has done a lot of work, you know, around the area of our youth and of promoting jazz within the generations. And so we're really excited about how First Wave interprets her life and her music in a way that is, you know, more familiar with the hip-hop generation. But jazz will be around when all of us, you know.
When we're all gone.
Right.
All right,
right.
Well, that's good to hear. Let's welcome phone calls. Our first caller for you is Lori in Milwaukee. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Thank you for a fascinating subject filling us in. I had a question about the timeline. I've heard of Miriam McPartland, and this is a blind spot for me in jazz. I love jazz, and I was interested maybe in her dates. I think you said something about 1944. And also, the other question I had was, did she have roots in classical training, or did she just have an ear for it and learn chords, say, from her father, whoever you mentioned she learned from? You know much about how she got her facility with the instrument.
Linda?
Well, I'm not quite clear about the first part of the question, but I'll take the second part first and see how we do. Mary Lou was living in a part of Pittsburgh, where she moved up from Atlanta with her family at a young age. And at that time, the piano was ubiquitous, and she began to hear good neighborhood pianists. Her stepfather was kind of a colorful character, and he liked to take her with her sometimes in the evenings when he went gambling. But this is a way she was exposed to hearing really terrific musicians. And I think, as I mentioned before, yes, they played a lot of stride, ragtime, blues, but the classics were kind of, some of them were folded into the mix, too. And so then Mary Lou went to, when she was going to school, at that time, interestingly enough, there was a pretty, really good, solid musical education for children, and she benefited from that as well.
How I'd like to add is that Marian McPartland was a jazz woman, jazz artist, and a contemporary of Mary Lou Williams, so that they knew each other and they knew each other's work. But I just don't want it to be thought that, did she only have an ear? She was a genius. The story is that her mother played the organ and she sat on her mother's lap. And at 4 years old, played what her mother played. So that, you know, she was primarily a self-trained artist, and she was, as most geniuses are, they simply pick up, you know, and explore and experiment and go further than the rest simply because of the talent within them.
And I would add to that, if I might quickly, that in Mary's case, something that added to her greatness was that she sought out and actively learned technically from everybody she was exposed to. For instance, Art Tatum was somebody she came across early on. And so she would sit with him and ask him, you know, they would work on technical aspects of the music. And she did that with everybody she came across. So she learned from all kinds of fantastic musicians as she went along.
And then made it her own. So she picked up from everyone, because I remember reading in Linda's biography that she met as a very young person another black woman artist who had, she said, a great left hand.
Right, Lovely Austin.
Right. And so she said to herself, Mary Lou did, I've got to learn how to do that. I've got to learn how to play just like that. And she worked her left hand.
I want to talk a little bit about her early years and her mother, because it weaves in to the story that you write about later in her life and her having a difficult time forgiving her mother. Early in the book, Linda, you talk about her being the illegitimate child, that is Mary Lou, of an impoverished and indifferent mother. And how difficult it was. Her mother had drinking problems, and she had a difficult time forgiving her mother as she became successful.
Well, I think, you know, like all such stories, there's a lot to it. And there's a lot more to her mother, Ginny Reiser, than that. I mean, you know, she was overwhelmed with the responsibilities of trying to raise a family and having left the South and then suddenly being thrust into, you know, the middle of the great migration of African Americans. But I think that what was difficult for Mary particularly was that as she became famous and she was a star in the African American community, especially during the swing era and afterwards, her mother essentially ignored her accomplishments. And so that she found very difficult, and I, you know, wouldn't presume to know why her mother was doing this, but I think her mother had her own difficulties, and Mary then turned to her sister and her other family members, and they created a strong family unit, if you will.
How hard was it to be a genius woman in jazz during this time period? We didn't have a women's movement. We didn't have much integration. You write about how she had been physically abused by some of the band people that she was with. She's on the road traveling with all these people. Was her genius accepted by the male musicians she worked with?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question of that. She was part of the musical community completely. And I think, like a lot of extremely talented artists, and in this case we're talking about women, she tended to concentrate on her art. I remember reading about a visual artist, I think it was Alice Neal, who had a different story, of course, but she once said, you know, what really counts is the art. And that was Mary Lou's opinion also. She had her struggles, and she as a woman, but she was always a musician first, and that's how she defined herself and lived her life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we also had to add into the equation that she was African American as well, and so, you know, faced as well racial difficulties. But for me, as a poet, what I did was do my own research, read Linda Dahl's biography, which is so wonderful. I'm glad to have that chance to say that on
the
radio. And then Tammy Kernoodles. And then I wrote poems that have the same title as her compositions or works that she made famous. So Jane Reynolds and I, for a number of years, have been doing Mary Lou's music and these poems that I wrote about her. And so when I hear Linda talk about her life, I mean, it's all true. In one of the poems, I talk about the fact that when she started off, it was her grandmother, Mama Matilda, that, you know, was family for her, and as Linda says, her sisters and other members. So that, you know, Mary Lou Williams' life reflected, you know, the intense segregation of the 1900s, early 1900s. And again, we celebrate and honor her because of her ability to create despite everything, despite her personal family, despite what was going on in terms of U.S. Racial climate, despite being in a male-dominated field, despite, this woman was not just able to create and explore and experiment, but left this hauntingly and wonderfully varied music.
Do you have one of those poems? Can you read it?
I sure can.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm going to read this one that's called... It's called Smooth Meddy, and it's after one of her compositions, Smooth Meddy 1. Every time I put my fingers to the keyboard, I celebrate me. Every time creativity flows from my mind through my heart, I celebrate the music in me. Every time I play caressing hard both, I am forever young. Every time I feel my sorrows, the joy of jazz refreshes me. Every time I share, I celebrate me. So these poems are from the perspective of Mary Lou Williams. In listening to her music, in reading her biographies, in doing research, I tried to imagine artistically what was it like to be Mary Lou Williams.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to imagine, yeah. We're going to continue our conversation. We're talking about Mary Lou Williams in Madison this weekend, a big centennial celebration of her life and work. Our guests are Fabu, who's Madison's poet laureate, artistic co-director of the Mary Lou Williams Centennial Celebration, Linda Dahl, author of Morning Glory, a biography of Mary Lou Williams, is with us as well. Our number is 800-486-8655 if you'd like to join the conversation here on the Ideas Network. Mary Lou Williams, this hour of the program. I like that piece. Makes me want to go home and play the piano, which I haven't done for years. We're joined by Fabu, Madison's poet laureate, and Linda Dahl, author of Morning Glory, a biography of Mary Lou Williams. I'm interested in hearing from those of you who are listening to our show about the future of jazz. We talk about that frequently, thinking it's going to die off because... for a lot of reasons, different kinds of music take over, but maybe we're losing some of the American history here about this form of music. What do you think? Those of you who are jazz fans, are you familiar with Mary Lou Williams? Why isn't she better known? Do you think that we'll be listening to music like this and remembering music like this at the end of the century that we're in right now? The future of jazz would be interesting to talk about. I'd like to go to you, Linda, and because we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Mary Lou's spiritual conversion and the role that Catholicism played in her life and the role that spirituality played in her life. I understand she was baptized through your book when she was right after her 47th birthday.
Well, I think when she was a kid, she was baptized also in a local Protestant church. I don't recall which. Yeah, she was. The thing about her and her spiritual quest, I think, is that when you look at her whole life, you can see that, perhaps like a lot of us, she was on a quest for a very long time. Music being at the heart of it, music as an expression of suffering and overcoming suffering, which she wrote about very eloquently in terms of the African-American experience, and then taking it beyond that to the human experience, and then and music as a healing experience. That was at the core of, I think, how Mary Lou developed later on. So when she, eventually she had a sort of what I call a dark night of the soul, and it's a complicated thing to talk about, and that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. But what happened is that she kind of lost her way. She grew very tired. She had a nervous breakdown, and she was in Europe and began turning to prayer. And from there, she began reaching out to, when she came back to the States, to some very, I guess you would say, hip Jesuit priests that she met through some friends. And that was a time of, you know, the liberalization of the church. And she also explored other churches for a while as a spiritual path, but ended up, there was a church near where she lived in Harlem, and it was open, and it was available, and she felt comfortable there. That led her to eventually convert to Catholicism formally.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say, as an African-American artist, what I gleaned from Mary Lou's life is that, you know, it took a toll on her, always battling for recognition. There were very many of her compositions that were taken and other people's names put to. They told me it's called borrowing in the jazz world, but the borrowing from Mary Lou was really, you know, epidemic. And she didn't realize the financial success, let alone, you know, being well known as she should have. And so I just agree with what Linda is saying. But as an artist, I feel certainly, you know, all of the struggles, all of the fights as she grew older really took a toll on her. And they said that when she walked off stage at an international jazz concert, she was really fed up with how jazz was being treated, how musicians were not respected, and then for herself as a professional artist, how she wasn't receiving her due. And so she turned inward again. And even though the public might differentiate between her jazz music or her secular music and her sacred music, for Mary Lou Williams, it was always about the spirit. It was always about what she said was a God-given talent. And in having a crisis in her life, actually turned her back to her childhood and an exploration of a faith that was always present, but not, you know, not at the forefront of people's understanding of her. And so the fact that she did create these wonderful pieces that are mass, and Father O'Brien said that, you know, only one has been recorded, Mary Lou Mass. But there are two others that have yet to be shared with the world, are just exquisite examples. Again, I can't say it enough of how the breadth of her work, how
yes.
wide it was.
Yes, yeah, the breadth is really quite phenomenal. Is there some type of work that you are most attracted to, both of you? Do you like the spiritual work that you listen to in her mass, or do you like the early work? Do you like the bop? Do you the swing? If you wanted to listen to something over and over and over again, would there be one of her styles?
Are you well? I'll take that first.
All right.
Okay. I think first of all, when you listen to, I think it's interesting to listen to her mass, Mary Lou's mass, which was formerly recorded as Music for Peace, a little different but similar, and Black Christ of the Andes, also known as St. Martin de Porres, which is a really important piece of her, quote, spiritual jazz. I think it's a very mixed bag myself. I think there are fabulous pieces that come out of the mass. And then there was a lot of stuff she was doing self-consciously to reach a younger audience. And she was experimenting with a lot of wild, difficult choral works. So, but for myself, my favorite things to listen to of hers are, I can't break it down. I like everything she did from every period, but some of my favorite compositions would be probably from, I think from the 40s on, I love some of the things that she did when she was sort of in that transitional phase.
But you know what? Listening to Mary Lou when she's got her foot tapping and she's swinging, when she swung like nobody else, all of it's great.
And I have to agree. As I'm just trying to think of which composition, which one would I say, oh, I just love to play this over and over. I mean, I haven't even grasped or heard, you know, when Father O'Brien is talking about 50 years of her recorded music, I realize how little I have heard and how little I've explored. And everything is so new and so varied. So it's like when you hear Mary Lou, you really do fall in love with her because there's something for everyone. And I don't think many artists can say that. Like, whatever your perspective, whatever kind of ear you have for music, in Mary Lou Williams, you will find something that you enjoy, that touches you, that gives you just a glimpse of her genius. And so I really am looking forward to the interpretation by Jerry Allen of her music, and again, about keeping jazz alive as well as the music of Mary Lou Williams.
Let's go to Paul from Madison. Hi, Paul, you're on the air.
Oh, hi there. A wonderful program, but is there a website that we can access these details? Because it was hard to keep in mind all the different things that are coming up.
Yes, there is. Can I say it?
Of course you may.
It's www.MaryLouWilliamsCentennial.org. Centennial, CENTENNIAL.org. And it lists everything that's happening. Because this celebration is reaching its high point for the Mary Lou Williams Fall Festival weekend, but actually we'll be celebrating her for a year long.
Will there be or have there been celebrations in New York and Chicago and some of the other large cities that you think of jazz places, Linda?
Yeah, well, there was already a celebration in New York earlier in the year at the Jazz at Lincoln Center, which was terrific. And it goes on. For instance, I just was at a club in the city that where Jerry Allen was playing with her group, interpreting Mary Lou's compositions. And, you know, Jerry Allen, I think, is just doing a great job of, shall we say, in her own wonderful way, you know, keeping that music alive. And I do want to mention one thing, too, is a friend of mine who loves jazz said to me, well, you know what, I don't know that much about Mary Lou. I hear this all the time. The thing is, it's only been in the last maybe, what, 5-8 years that a great number of her compositions are easily available on CD. And there's a DVD from a 1978 performance she did solo piano at Montreux,
right,
which is fabulous because it gives people, you can really, you know, it's up close and personal, and it's Mary Lou taking that early music and going right up to the present. I highly recommend it.
Well, it's wonderful to be able to keep somebody alive for a long period of time, too, because I didn't know very much about Mary Lou, and to listen to the music and to have this terrific festival honoring her life and her genius is very good, and it does keep her alive. We need to do more of that, I think, so we don't lose people.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the giftedness that people bring to the world should be remembered. There's room for Mary Lou and the jazz legacy. There is room for her and for her talent and for what she gave.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there sure is room for her. There's no doubt about that. We're going to end, and we will in a moment, with a little bit more of her composition and her great piano playing. Again, the concert, it's not just a concert. There's a symposium and panel discussion of her work, and it's taking place in Madison over the weekend. Go to Mary Lou Williams Centennial altogether.org to get a rundown of all the different events that are taking place. And you can also go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, because Rhonda's put together a link of all the things that are happening. It would be a good thing to do for young people, too, to introduce them if they haven't already heard jazz music. We thank Linda Dahl, author of Morning Glory, a biography of Mary Lou Williams, and also Fabu, Madison's poet laureate, artistic co-director of the Mary Lou Williams Centennial Celebration in Madison. And thanks to Father Peter O'Brien, longtime friend, executive director of the Mary Lou Williams Foundation, for being with us the first part of our program. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program and doing on-air production. And thanks to Chrissy Pease for answering phone calls here in our studios. And thanks for your calls as well. Until tomorrow, this is the Ideas Network.